Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to the CDC media briefing to mark World Polio Day. I am Michelle Bonds, the Director of the Division of Public Affairs at CDC. CDC works around the clock and around the globe to protect people from health threats. Before I introduce our speakers, I would like to welcome those of you in the room and those joining us by phone. I'd especially like to welcome the international media who are joining us through live webcast. Today, our speakers will highlight historic progress toward eradicating polio and outline what is needed to achieve polio-free world. Following a brief remarks from our four speakers, we will take questions on the topic from the media in the room and on the phone. When acknowledged, please wait till you're acknowledged by the moderator, and then state your name, your affiliation, before asking your question. The briefing will conclude with an opportunity for media here on site to get an opportunity to get a first look at the Rotary and UNICEF virtual reality showcase on polio. And now to introduce our speakers, we have Dr. Tom Frieden, the Director of Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Mr. John Germ, the 2016-2017 President of Rotary International, Mr. Risa Husseini, Director of Polio Eradication, UNICEF, and our special guest today, Dennis Ogbe, Paralympic athlete and polio survivor. Dr. Frieden?
Thank you very much, and thank you all for joining us. This is World Polio Day, and it's an important one because we are on the brink of eradication of polio. We're closer than ever. All too often in public health, only bad news is news. But today we do have good news, and I want to give you four numbers. And behind each of these numbers, there are so many stories. In 1988, when the world committed to eradicating polio, there were an estimated 350,000 children disabled by polio. That's nearly 1,000 every day of the year. So far this year, there have been 27 diagnosed cases of polio. 350,000 to 27. Now, two other numbers. In this period, 2.5 billion children have been vaccinated against polio, and if it were not for this effort, an estimated 15 million more children would be disabled. 15 million people who don't have to struggle with the disability. It isn't so long ago that polio was common in this country and elsewhere. When I did my medical training, we still had an iron lung on the floor where we treated patients, and one of my colleagues in medical school was struggling with post-polio syndrome. Today, we've learned also of two more funding announcements, generous contributions from the Global Affairs of Canada, as well as from former Mayor Michael Bloomberg, $25 million commitment, adding to his prior $100 million commitment, and Ray Dalio, Chairman and Co-Chief Investment Officer at Bridgewater Associates, is donating $30 million, and an anonymous donor, $15 million, all to overcome the setbacks. Every year polio eradication is delayed, the incremental cost is about $800 million. So it's urgent to protect children and to be able to get over the finish line that we get additional resources. The event that Rotary International is having here tonight, along with CDC, will raise more awareness. The Global Polio Eradication Initiative is made up of five partners: Rotary International, CDC, the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Eradication of polio is a CDC priority. In fact, for nearly 5 years, we've had our Emergency Operations Center activated so that all resources of CDC are available to help get over the finish line. There are four areas of action that we need to get over the finish line. First, the new cases in Nigeria highlight the need to improve tracking of the disease, particularly anywhere there may be insecurity. It is now clear that the disease was spreading in inaccessible, insecure areas of Borno for approximately 5 years before it was detected. That means that all over the world where there are areas that we don't have access to, we need to make sure that polio is not lurking. Second, we have to redouble our efforts to get over the finish line in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Despite big obstacles, both countries are making substantial progress. Third, while focusing on interrupting the virus where it's still spreading, we have to transition the polio services and polio programs so that they protect the lives and health of children and others around the world. And this is being done in areas like polio, which we're confident are polio-free. We continue to track for polio, but use those resources to do other things that will also save lives. And fourth, we have to ensure that any remaining polio virus in laboratories around the world is contained so that once eradication is achieved, the virus doesn't get out and become a problem again. The last mile of a journey is often the hardest, and so it has been with polio. But it's been a long journey, and we can see the end in sight. And that end lifts our spirits and our hearts. That end reminds us that we will get to a day when polio is history. It will be the ultimate in both sustainability and equity, because it will be forever and for everyone. Thank you very much, and I'll turn it now over to John Jerram, a wonderful partner from Rotary International.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. It's a very exciting time to be a Rotary member, because when Rotary first started this program in 1979, and then the partnership came about, we have been committed to this, and we will remain committed until the end. As Dr. Frieden said, we are closer than we've ever been before. But it's also an issue of which I'm personally committed to. My own father was struck with polio as an adult. The doctor said that he would never walk again. My father was determined that, yes, he would walk again. So he did exercises, just like you're going to hear from Dennis shortly after a while. He had my mother tie an old iron to his leg where the rope would never touch the ground. And he lifted his leg little by little every day until he could walk again. He did walk again. He walked with a limp. He didn't give up, and I don't give up. And Rotary does not give up. That is why this year, as president of Rotary International, I'm more determined than ever that we will, in fact, keep up our efforts to eradicate polio until the job is done. That means that we have to double our efforts in Afghanistan, Nigeria, Pakistan. That means we have to have increased surveillance, improved surveillance. It means stronger immunization systems. It means vaccinating as many children as possible, even in areas that are incredibly difficult for us to reach. We know what we need to do. It's a matter of doing it in order to eradicate polio. We know how much it's going to cost. It's going to cost us an additional $1.5 billion in order to reach our goal of eradication. What happens if we don't make the $1.5 billion? Polio will spread again, and if it does, it's going to cost us billions of dollars, and it's going to cost us hundreds of thousands of lives a year for those vulnerable children that we must protect against this virus. It could cost us a dream of a polio-free world. You've heard the comments from Dr. Frieden about the recent contributions we got today. And Rotary would like to thank those individuals for their contributions. But we'd also like to thank the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who have agreed to match Rotary $2 for $1 for up to $35 million that Rotary commits on an annualized basis to eradicate polio. I've been with Rotary a long time. I've seen us conquer polio in the Americas, the Western Pacific area, Southeast Asia. I've seen us donate $1.6 billion to immunize more than 2.5 billion children. Rotary started this, as I said a few minutes ago, more than 30 years ago. We've stayed with it, and we will continue to stay with it. The polio virus is persistent, but Rotary is more persistent, and we will, in fact, win this battle. And when we do, all of us will have made good on a promise we made over 30 years ago, the promise to leave our children, and their children in a world that is polio-free. Thank you. Lisa?
Thank you very much, John. Dr. Frieden, Dennis, colleagues, it's a pleasure to represent Mr. Lake, who couldn't be with us today. to be among you. 27 cases. 27 cases, as Dr. Friedman says. That's what it comes down to. After stalking the world for generations, and after threatening, as you heard earlier on, the lives of millions and millions of children, polio is almost defeated. After countless number of frontline workers and vaccinators reaching to the remotest corner of the world, often in a very, very dangerous circumstances, and to immunize countless number of children, you're talking about 2.5 billion children since it started, polio is almost defeated. And of course, after the massive global movement led by the governments, but with the valued partnership that we heard earlier on, Center for Disease Control, the Rotary International, World Health Organization, UNICEF, and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and of course the generous support of the donors, as you heard earlier on, polio is almost defeated. And I said almost, because the recent, as you said, the recent cases of polio viruses in Nigeria is a sharp reminder that almost is not good enough. It was for all of us a wake-up call that the work is not done unless it's totally done. We cannot afford to let go right now. We have to reach every single child, no matter where it lives, whether it's in isolated areas of Laos, Myanmar, or in areas of Borno, where we have not been able to reach children because of the inaccessibility. Just last week, after the military operation in northeast of Nigeria, was able to create corridors and liberate areas for people to come out. We have about 2 million people, influx of people who have come out of the previously inaccessible areas. And last week we had the massive campaign targeting 41 million children, not only in Nigeria, but also because of the risk of a spread in the Lake Chad region, covering 5 countries. It was the third round of 5 rounds of mass campaign in all those countries. And it was in order to prevent the wild virus circulation to neighboring countries because of the porous border and people moving back and forth. Yes, we have had 4 cases so far. But we have to keep it in the context. We are talking about 2 million people who had not received any vaccination for nearly 3 years, 400 children, 400,000 children who had not received polio for 3 years, and we have had 4 cases. That shows the resilience of, first of all, the resilience of the system to pick up the cases, second, to be able to control it over there. So the rapid response in Nigeria, the recent successes that we have all had in India, Somalia, the outbreak in Syria, and the very strong progress that we have seen in Pakistan and Afghanistan are the testimony to what we have built together and what we have been able to achieve. I believe that what we have done in places with the achievement that we have had, we have got a blueprint for doing even better. From improving, as Dr. Friedman mentioned, the surveillance, to developing innovative ways to reaching children that we have not reached before. Today, Rotary and UNICEF are launching 2 new virtual reality videos that would clearly show how we have been able to achieve what we have achieved today. And what we need to do is we need to finish the job, because the places like Nigeria, where there is a wild virus, they put the countries like Kenya that have been free for a while at risk of importation. And once polio outbreak happens, it happens once, it happens everywhere. So we cannot rest, and we will not rest until we reach every last child with the polio vaccination. Thank you very much. Benny?
Thank you. It's an awesome privilege to come here, Dr. Fadin, John, Dr. Razi. In that sequence, I'm really like a true story. Most of these things they are talking about is kind of theoretical in theory. So I'm the living example, and that's why I'm going to give you like a snapshot of my life and a snapshot to see that polio is still real. And with the work you guys are committing here, it's going to go a long, long way. As you all know, my name is Dennis Ogbe. I'm from Nigeria. I was born in a little village called Samaru Village. When I was 3 years old, I contracted malaria. I was taken to the hospital. And while on the hospital bed, I contracted the polio virus. As a young 3-year-old lad that have so much life and enthusiasm to see what the future holds for me, I was paralyzed from my waist down. I couldn't use either of my limbs. And then there were two things, like back home in Nigeria then, it's either they put you out to go beg for alms on the street, but my dad, with his 7th grade education, knew that education was going to be my 7th grade. So now that I'm paralyzed, what do I do as a kid? I just want you guys to just kind of imagine your own kid. Some of you have kids here. A lot of kids in my neighborhood who taunt me, kids will always be kids. And back home in Nigeria then, our number one sport is soccer. We call it football over there. So when I want to go play soccer with my peers, when they see me coming in my old grungy wheelchair, and mind you, the areas are not as paved as we have here. So I need somebody to actually help me. So when those kids see me coming, they go to higher grounds. And when they go to higher grounds, it's impossible for me to get there. But somehow, due to my stubbornness too, that helped me a lot, I would try to go on my crutches, on my caliper, and then try to like hop and stay with them. So when they play soccer around me, it gave me that sense of belonging that I'm playing with my peers, and I kept doing it. So when next they see me, some of those kids, so Dennis is coming. Now they can't push me away. They kind of seize my crutches and say, Dennis, if you can take one step, then you play with us. Next time, Dennis, if you can take two steps, play with us. And while I'm doing that, fall down with bruises here and there, and I know a doctor told me that was a 50-50 chance that I could hurt myself even more. But lo and behold, God was so kind, I overcame it. And right now, even though I walk with a big limp, my left leg is still paralyzed. And looking at that too, my dad told me, I told you earlier that it's not how you start that matters. Because when this thing happens, most times when those kids reject me, I can't play. I go in, shut myself in the door, in the room, and cry. I cry really, really hard. Most times my mom come in consoling me, she joins me. My dad or my sibling, anybody come consoling, they join me. That's how painful I want you guys to just paint that picture. I'm going to fast forward. So it's now left for me. What am I going to do? And God, so kind, I said, my dad told me, it's not how you start that matters, it's how you finish. And he put me to go to school at a very early age. At school, it's a bigger obstacle. Our schools, the road is not paved. There's no access to people with disabilities. And it was really, really tough. When I say tough, it was really, really tough. Hopefully, you guys are going to see some of the pictures later, and then you see how the kind of pain that we go through. But I kind of muscled it, of course, with God's grace. I went to school. And then I started competing in sports, as you all know. And I'll cut the long story short. I got into sport in a very, very unique way. And in the village where I grew up, most of those opportunities are not always there. But somehow I got involved in sports. And through sports, I tried to, like, lift myself up from where I was. And as Mr. John talked about, your dad, right?
Yes.
I did a lot of exercise on my own. Like, I have to improvise. There was no gym to go to work out. There was nobody to like to help me back and forth, but I have to try to do a lot of things myself based on what I've heard and seen. So I improvised with motor parts and things to lift weights, walk on my left, on my leg. I walk now. Many people will say, hey, didn't you walk? Yeah, but if you see how I coordinate my paralyzed left leg with my hip, with my upper body, doctors say that it's unimaginable what I do. And that is true sport. And I competed in shot put, discus, and javelin because I knew I tried all kinds of sports, mind you, not just soccer. Basketball was another thing. And because I can't run up and down the court and it's very physical, I try to do what works for me. In soccer, because I can't run up and down, guess what I did? Anybody here? What position I played? I was a goalkeeper. So most times when those kids see that, oh, Dennis has a paralyzed left leg, they try to kick it that way, I kind of work too hard, extra time to perfect my diving towards my left side that is paralyzed. So right now, they don't know what to do with Dennis. Look, anytime they hit the ball, I kind of try to stop it. So lo and behold, I kind of find my hand myself with competing with people with disability like I am. When I went to Lagos for the first time to compete nationally, because there were only four sports. There was track and field, there was wheelchair racing, there's shot put, discus, javelin. Those are all what we had then. But because of the facilities we don't have then, I thought shot put, discus, javelin would be what I can do because I can use my hands, God-given hands and talent that he gave me. So I started competing, and to fast forward, I competed locally, I won. Nationally, I won, and I was representing my country then. And that was when I met Jim Vargo. He was the head coach for Bellarmine University here in the U.S. He saw me. He saw how I was networking, and the way I throw in Paralympics, I have a special throwing chair. I didn't have one made for me, and my country is sending me to an international competition without enough tools. But with God-given talent and what I have, education, I have to network among the other athletes, borrow their chair. And mind you, this is custom-made. I borrowed their chair to compete, and when I compete, I beat them with their own chair. So normally, it's supposed to be three throws. Those are no track and field. You have to throw the first three, and then they select out of the first three throws for the final three throws. And most times when I beat them after the first three, when I come back to go for finals, most of them refuse to give me their throwing chair. So I have to lobby again, literally. But while I was doing that, this coach was watching behind the scene. And after the competition, he met me and spoke to me and gave me the opportunity to come to Bellarmine, that I'll be a very good addition to their track and field program. And this is where I am. Cut the long story short, I had my first degree, undergraduate degree in business, and I had my MBA. And I was competing with able-bodied athletes. So while doing that, still in the light of the Paralympics, I went into that sport. After getting my citizenship in 2010, I compete locally, nationally, internationally too. And I was so fortunate to represent America in the Paralympic Games in London, 2012. And I'm also opportune I got married here in the U.S. I have two kids. So, you see, I'm so blessed if you look at it, if you try to follow my trend. And then looking at where I am today, you think Dennis is successful, he has made it? No. There's something in my heart that still burns. There's something in my heart that pain is there. Polio, yes, we can eradicate it. People like us that have contracted polio is going to live with us forever. And to tell you the truth, there are times that you see me standing, working with you all, that even at home, once in a while, when I'm not going to go into that, when I don't have my balance well, I still fall. My little one will say, Daddy, are you okay? That is something that is hard for any parent to see and not wish it for his own kids or for their own self. So my plight to you all today that you are here is really, really crucial. That whatever you say out there is really crucial. And we have fought this fight, as my colleagues have talked about, a long time. But as a sportsman, this is the toughest competition anybody can do. But we can do it. And we have been trying all along. And as we said, we're almost 99% sure that, yes, we can eradicate polio. With your help, with organizations like Rotary International, UNICEF, United Nations Foundation Short That Life Campaign, and a host of other organizations and individuals, this is the time. Look at me. Look at my life. Look at what I've done. I've survived it. I'm lucky. But there are a lot of people that didn't even make it. They died before 5 years old. Those that made it are still suffering to today. Some of those pictures, they are still crawling on the floor. Some of them are still like very dependent. People have to help them do one thing or the other. That is the eye of polio. And just with a drop, we can save lives. So without further ado, I just want to thank you all so much for coming here and hopefully you will have like maybe Q&A time, and I can tell you more about that. Thank you so much, and the privilege.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks.
Thank you for sharing your story and for your story of triumph and determination, and for reminding us that we're really at our best when we see the lives and the numbers, the lives and the faces behind the numbers. Because each one of those 1,000 kids who today didn't get paralyzed from polio is a life story that's been changed. Each one of those 15 million kids that hasn't been paralyzed by polio over the past decades is a life that's been changed forever. We don't know their names, but we know they exist. They're out there, as are the billions of children to be born in the future who we hope will be born into a world without polio. We're on the brink of eradication. The opportunity is the best it's ever been. We have stronger childhood immunity, stronger surveillance, but we need to reach every last child, including in areas of insecurity. Eradicating polio is achievable, and it reminds us that health can be a bridge, something that everyone in the world can agree to, that we can work together on as a global community with common goals against a common enemy. The enemy is not other people, it's a virus. Today, we renew our dedication and commitment to get to polio zero. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. We're ready to take questions. For those in the room, please raise your hand. Remember to state your name and your affiliation before your question. Do we have any questions on the phone?
At this time, there are no questions.
Yes.
Jeffrey Kluger, Time Magazine. I was just wondering, we're focusing so much, and rightly so, on Nigeria this year. The numbers out of Pakistan and Afghanistan are also very encouraging, but obviously they haven't reached polio zero yet. What progress has been made this year in those two other endemic countries?
I'll make some comments, and Risa or John may want to make more. We've seen really encouraging progress in Pakistan, where there's a much more accountable system. They're reaching kids who weren't reached before. There are areas of the country where vaccination could not be done in the past and is now being done. The surveillance indicators are strong, and community vaccination initiatives have been highly effective, and UNICEF has done a terrific job hiring thousands of women who live in community and can provide vaccination even in areas where security may not be as we would wish. In Afghanistan, we have seen progress in some areas, but the security situation does make it challenging. And for that reason, the travel between the two countries is particularly important. And we've been strengthening systems to vaccinate children as they move from one country to the next or within countries. Afghanistan has a more sparsely populated environment, and that makes it less hospitable for the polio virus. However, there are parts of Afghanistan, as in parts of Borno, Nigeria, where vaccination can't yet securely reach. And really, for any place in the world where we can't get vaccines in and surveillance done, we're concerned, given the lesson of Borno, of Nigeria, that we need to intensify supervision, intensify surveillance, so that we know for a fact, for sure and confidently, that there's no polio there. And there are parts of the world, particularly insecure parts, where we need to double down on that surveillance. Risa, would you like to add about Pakistan?
Yeah. If I just may come in. You are right, Dr. President, you say we see tremendous progress in both Afghanistan and Pakistan. If you look at Pakistan, we have had the genetic, the diversity of the virus has narrowed down. It's the smallest that we have had. So that's a reduction in there. If you look at the data that we are getting out of the campaigns, there was a time where you used to have 9% of the children who have been vaccinated, they were zero dose. That means they have not received any vaccination before. That has reached zero, actually. The last round, we didn't have a single child
that had not received a dose before. And then we look at the data both in Pakistan and Afghanistan, you see the sharp decline on resistance. Another way of looking at it, if you look at the map of the poliovirus 2015 and 2016, the virus is actually cornered in few areas, both in Pakistan and in Afghanistan. The Afghanistan one is an interesting one because, as Dr. Frieden said, we do have problems with some areas that are inaccessible. Although we do the local negotiation, they are inaccessible. But you have four cases coming from a single village that has been with the ISIS, and we have not been able to negotiate access. But the virus was contained over there. So there is a wall of resistance that is built around that. That's as part of the strategies. We do have right now, because of, I'm sure you must have heard, because of the population movement, because of the change of policy, some of the refugees going back, and that's where we have to keep our guards high up and making sure that the viruses does not spread across the border.
I'd like to take a call from the phone.
Our first question comes from Mike Stobie with the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had two questions. First, the gentleman from Rotary, I believe, said 1.5 billion is needed to reach the goal of eradication. Could you all tell me who came up with that estimate and in as detailed a manner as possible, how that money would be spent, what you need to do with it in order to achieve that goal? And the second question is, could you just say a little more about what the objective of today's program is? Are you hoping it'll attract more funding? Thank you.
Why don't you start? I get the start, huh? The budget has been developed by a group of individuals that are professional, that are led by, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is actually working with us on our financial objectives. A budget has been put together that has been agreed to by the partnership as to what it will take in order to finish the job. Let us say that also that it takes 3 years after the last case for us to be able to declare that the world would be polio-free. During that same period of time, while we may have 27 cases, we're still having to provide vaccine and vaccinate about 400 million children a year. We're also providing surveillance in about 72 different countries now. So it costs a lot of money. And until each of these children, until there is no more cases, are no more cases, we have to continue to vaccinate all the children in the world in order to protect them in case a wild poliovirus does show up. So it is a very expensive thing, and it is one that has been well thought out. And I think that we're going to get that money. Today, we are trying to make the public more aware. We have a lot of people in this world that don't believe polio exists. And polio, in fact, does exist. And so we have to get the word out there that polio is there. We have to continue our fight to that, and it's an expensive fight. So, yes, it's going to take a lot of money, and we could get you a detailed budget if you would like to have a detailed budget. We can certainly provide that for you. There are no secrets in our game. We are open to everything and every suggestion, and we'd be happy to take any contribution we can get, too.
Thank you, John. I think John has said it well. We have this coalition of five organizations that I listed earlier, the Global Polio Eradication Initiative. We've looked very carefully at the budgetary needs. Those have been reviewed not only by the individual organizations, but also by a group looking very specifically at what's needed. And as I mentioned, the problem is that for each year that eradication slips into the future, you have to continue the efforts for one more year. And when we open a new front, as with Nigeria, there are additional expenses to vaccinate more children, not only in Nigeria, but as Riza mentioned, in a five-country region where children are at risk. and to continuously improve surveillance so we can have confidence that there isn't polio lurking anywhere else. And today's event, we hope, will draw attention both to the progress that's being made and to what is needed additionally, not only in terms of resources, but in terms of effort. I think Lisa said it very well, that polio is almost defeated, but almost isn't good enough. And we want to get over the finish line.
Can I just come in? Just to respond to your questions, maybe following what John, you mentioned, we have to do the immunization. So 50% of the additional cost will go actually for making sure that there is a high level of immunity among the children. The other 50%, it goes for sustaining the game. After we have interrupted the wild virus, as it was mentioned, you got to have a strong surveillance system. You have eventually, our aim is to remove the oral polio vaccines. In 2016, I just take the opportunity to say that, we had one of the largest public health globally that it happened. In April 2016, 154 countries, within 2 weeks, to remove one of the OPV vaccines, one of the P2, from the what we call the TOPV, made it to BOPV. We have to do the same again once we have made sure that there is no wild poliovirus circulation, and that requires the funding.
Yeah, and another crucial part that will need those funding is, after all is said and done, we have to keep that awareness going. And I guess that requires money too, because that education is very, very key. When my kid was born, there at the hospital, they had all the immunization and inoculation that need to be done. Not all parts of the world do that. So we need to push that out in order to sustain it. So after a child is born and after the polio vaccine is given, that is not all. I think that requires a lot of funding to keep that to be sustaining, as you talked about, and then keep it going for some time. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you to our speakers today, and for those of you in the room and joining us via phone or on webcast. We encourage everyone to participate in World Polio Day live stream event tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time by going to www.endpolio.org. This concludes our media briefing. I invite the media in the room to join us in the lobby to engage in the virtual reality experience. Media with questions about today's topic can call the CDC media line at 404-639-3286 or email media@cdc.gov. A transcript of this media briefing will be available at cdc.gov/media. Thank you.